Mr. Gravy. Good morning, brethren.
Good morning.
It's nice to see you all again. Some we haven't met yet, we'll take care of that after services. We had to chuckle. About two-thirds of our way in, I don't know if you remember, about a year, maybe 2 years ago, we were here late. Mr. Kennebec had to start speaking because we got held up behind a parade. Well, wouldn't you know it? Today, we discovered the parade again in the middle of downtown Eminence. So thankfully, this time we had a GPS and we were able to take a couple roads and finally find a way around that block off. We just couldn't believe it. What are the odds that it would be the same weekend? Apparently, this weekend is 100%. How many of you have kept up on or heard of the new Mars rover that has landed just recently? It took about 8 months for the vehicle to get from Earth to the atmosphere of Mars. Anybody know the cost of the mission thus far? Millions? Hundreds of millions? Actually billions. I think $2 billion with a B. To get this craft to Mars. It's about the size of a car. It's about 2 tons, has 6 wheels, has all kinds of cameras, has a laser, a little science lab that can actually vaporize rock and analyze the sediment going through the air to find out what the rock is made out of. Well, they spent hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, thousands of man hours to get this vehicle up there. But it hinged on arrival, obviously. The scary part for the scientists, for the engineers, began when the capsule started going into the atmosphere. The heat shield is in place, and of course it's got this blast, 3,000 degrees, going around the protective shell. And from that point to when it lands, it was about 7 minutes from the point of entry into the atmosphere to when it landed on the surface. And did anybody see a summary of what transpired in that process? Where he would jettison a parachute, it's going like 1,000 miles an hour, and the parachute slows it down, and it jettisons part of its cap, and the base falls off. And at some point, it separates from the parachute and actually has thrusters. And so it starts to hover. It's still going fast and slows down to the point where it's just at the right height. It releases the craft that's inside, the six-wheeled vehicle, slowly lowers it down. It's called a sky crane. At least that's the term they gave it. And at just the right height and speed, it sets it down on the surface, releases the cables, and the thrusters fly off and crashes, hopefully not on the craft itself, but somewhere else. And it did. But for those 7 minutes, the engineers were in what they called 7 minutes of terror, because they could not communicate with the craft. Why not? Well, it took 13 minutes for any signals coming from the craft to reach back to JPL Labs, and 13 minutes to transmit any corrections back again. So if there were any problems during that time frame, they would have known about it 7 minutes too late. And then to make any corrections, 13 minutes too late beyond that. So there's a significant time lag, almost a half hour, between the time they were aware of a problem to the time they could do anything about it, or have those changes actually be submitted to the vehicle itself. So those 7 minutes, they were flying blind. So what I wanted to do today is to review for us how we can separate ourselves or separate the distance that can occur between us and God. There can be a distance between us. And with 6 weeks between us and the Feast of Tabernacles, less than that for the beginning of the fall feast season, we can do a few things to separate the distance between ourselves and God, to tune our minds the right way so that we can get the very most out of the fall feast season. And to do that, I'd like to look at a checklist. Let's look at a checklist in Philippians 4, verse 8. And we'll use this checklist as a means to reduce the distance between ourselves and God. This will be a way to reduce the distance between ourselves and God. Philippians chapter 4, verse 8. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue, and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. So we use this particular verse as our checklist. Let's start with whatever things are true. So for the first item on our checklist, true. For that, let's turn to Psalms 15. Psalms 15. This is the psalm, at least in my Bible, identified as the character of those who may dwell with the Lord. And this is actually part of one of our hymns that goes back many years, many decades. Psalm 15, starting in verse 1, we'll read 1 and 2. Lord, who may abide in your tabernacle? Who may dwell in your holy hill? And the answer, he who walks uprightly, who works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart. Truth is tough. It's a rare commodity. Pontius Pilate himself asked, what is truth? It's hard to identify, especially when humans are the ones modifying or identifying or indicating what is true. We don't have the ability to accurately identify what is true or preserve truth on our own. We have an excellent bad example of that when we turn on the television that night. We are now hot into the campaigning season, aren't we? Is there such thing as a true political ad? Anywhere? Anytime? By any party? It is hard to find 100% truth in these ads. And what will happen oftentimes is it'll take a little grain of truth and wrap it with the candy coating of, well, whatever it is that they're trying to sell to the constituents, isn't it? There's not much truth in those ads. But truth is complete. It's all the way through. I've been on a number of moves in the Cincinnati area, and it's readily evident what furniture is made of wood, what isn't made of wood. It might look like it's wood. It might look like it's completely wood, but as soon as you try to lift it, you know whether or not it's veneer on the outside or if it's solid wood all the way through. They can make some very good veneer finishes these days, can't they? It looks, may even feel like real wood. It has grain to it. It looks like it has grain. But you catch your sleeve on the corner of it and suddenly it peels back and you find that this expensive piece of furniture really shouldn't have had the price tag it did have because it's not solid wood. It had a veneer on the outside. It looked like wood, but it wasn't really. Have you had the chance recently of having saltwater taffy? It can be enjoyable. It can also last a long time, can't it? Once you get it in between those teeth, that it's hard to separate. It can be a good source of loosening fillings and other appliances that should not be loosened. But saltwater taffy is interesting. They have a way of making it in Oriental countries where they roll different colors, different strands of colors, and they arrange it in their roll. Before they roll it up, they put it on their counter, a color black, a strand of red, many different colors. And they roll it up, and then when they cut it, it has a picture, maybe a happy face, maybe a baseball design or a football design. Whatever the design is, it's the same or very close to the same throughout the entire roll before they serve it. It's all the way through, and that's the way truth is. It doesn't present itself one way on the surface and have something else underneath. It is all the way through. It's not illusory. Truth is something that promises only what it can deliver. And that's what we need to look at in our lives. Are we speaking the truth? Are we learning the truth? Are we reading the truth through daily Bible study? Those are the questions that we can ask. Are we true to our friendships? Are we true to our beliefs? There is a lot to examine in the word true, but that is one of the items on our checklist. True. True to God. True to our neighbors. Now, how do we maintain the truth? Well, one of the ways we do so is by attendance at Sabbath services whenever we can. Again, as mentioned, with Bible study. We can do Bible study on our own. We can connect to Bible studies online if we have that ability at home. Truth is one of the items on our checklist. The next one is noble. Noble. And for that, let's turn to the book of Titus. Titus chapter 2. Titus chapter 2, verses 1 through 2. In my Bible, this section is titled Qualities of a Sound Church. It begins, "But as for you, speak the things which are proper for sound doctrine," which aligns itself with truth, as we just talked about. Verse 2, "That the older men be sober, reverent, temperate, sound in faith, in love, in patience." The word there for reverent is the same Greek word as in 4 verse 8, noble. Noble and reverent, the same word. So that's what we're going to focus on. And a lot of commentaries talk about reverent or noble being venerable, being honorable, or worthy, nobly serious. Not too long ago was the anniversary of the Flintstones. Who knows who Fred Flintstone is? Who's heard of Fred Flintstone? Who's eaten Fred Flintstone? And the vitamins. He loved the bowl, didn't he? I was particularly amused by the way he would approach before he released the ball. He was on his tippy toes before he'd release. No bowling shoes required at that alley, by the way. But he would bowl. You can't now at a bowling alley wear golf shoes, for example. You're required to wear bowling shoes. You wouldn't do well, it wouldn't be advisable to wear roller skates while bowling. Roller skates are very good at what they do in a roller arena. They don't do so well at a bowling alley. Or how about the Olympics? Have you seen the Olympics this year? Have you had a chance to watch any of it? There are some amazing sports. Some of them, I think, are arguably activities, not really sports. But you can get a medal for these, so I guess we have to call them sports. I was watching synchronized diving, and it just blew me away. How is this a sport? This is falling together. This is not a sport, but they get medals, so we have to call it a sport now. Fencing. I've got some relatives who are into fencing. The épée or the saber. And they've got the full face mask and the guards and the whole shebang. They can wear that. To wear such a get-up running the 100-meter dash would not do so well. Usain Bolt, who broke records, would not have run as fast if he were wearing the wrong thing. If he was wearing fencing gear, if he was wearing flippers like a frogman, he would not run as fast. That comes back to noble. Nobility is, for attire anyway, wearing the right thing at the right occasion. Wearing the correct clothing for the right occasion, for the right venue. But it goes beyond that. Nobility is also the appropriate behavior for the right venue. At a ballroom dancing competition, it's probably not the best time to do breakdancing. It is the wrong venue for that behavior. Barclay talks about nobility as, in reference to a Christian, this way. A Christian is a person who treats the world as God's temple, and then behaves in the temple as he or she should. So if the whole world is God's temple, and we understand that when we go into church, we behave a certain way, we talk a certain way, we fellowship a certain way, because we are coming before God, and rightly we should. Now, if a Christian sees all of God's creation as his temple, which it is, then our behavior should be such everywhere. Which doesn't mean we can't have fun. It doesn't mean we can't laugh and we can't engage in other activities that are allowed by God's laws, it means that we have context for everything that we do. But there is a minimum level of behavior, of nobility that we have, even outside, to anybody we meet. That's part of letting our light shine, isn't it? Being noble. The next item on our checklist, just. Just. Let's take a look at Deuteronomy chapter 16. Deuteronomy 16. We'll start in verse 18. This is just after talking about the Feast of Tabernacles. Verse 18. You shall appoint judges and officers in all your gates, which the Lord your God gives you according to your tribes, and they shall judge the people with just judgment. You shall not pervert justice. You shall not show partiality, nor take a bribe, for a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and twists the words of the righteous. Verse 20, you shall follow what is altogether just, that you may live and inherit the land which the Lord your God is giving you. So at a point where what's going on in history is nation building, God is clarifying what type of nation he wanted Israel to have. And one of the central tenets was justice, to be just. No partiality. Don't take bribes. And in verse 20, you shall follow what is altogether just, so that you may live and inherit the land the Lord your God gives you. A couple of decades ago, there was a movie about a private school, and it was a very conservative school. The students didn't seem to know how to have much in the way of creative thought, which in some ways is good, in other ways it's not good at all. But there was a phrase that came out in that movie, carpe diem. You remember hearing that from a movie, carpe diem? Seize the day. Make the most of the day. The instructor who brought that out to the students further clarified what he meant by that. Carpe diem, seize the day. You don't get another chance to live today, so seize it. Suck the marrow out of it. Get the very most out of it. Live for today, because tomorrow you're going to die, was essentially what he said. The drawback of that statement is in postmodern thought that then becomes an emphasis on the pursuit of pleasure because there's no consequence. You don't have to answer for what you do today. So take as much as you can, because if you don't take it, somebody else is going to take it. It's a kind of a zero sum thought process. We can't share something and both be happy, therefore I'm going to take it so that I alone can be happy. So you can't be happy. But that is quite the opposite of what the Christian's mindset should be, of justice, of ensuring there's enough for everybody. Barclay, again, if I can refer to him, talks about this word being just this way. A Christian has their thoughts and their actions set to their duty to man after their duty towards God. So we have our duty towards God, and we have a duty towards man. We had a variation on that theme at preaching camp we went to in Tennessee. Mr. Paul Smith came and talked about three things. One, we serve God. Two, we serve our fellow man. And three, we serve ourselves. Which doesn't mean that we neglect ourselves. But we have to have God as our first priority to serve other people. It's a lot of fun seeing this in action at the Feast of Tabernacles especially, where you have strangers crushing the front doors. And there's a backlog because there are two church members both holding the door saying, you first. No, you first. No, I insist, you go first. I serve you first. No, really, you need to go first. You've got a family. I know, but you have a family. You should go first. And everybody's backed up because they're trying to serve each other. That's a beautiful thing. Unless you need to get inside for some urgent reason. But serving each other is a hallmark of Christianity. Of not trying to take from somebody else, but to serve them. Being just. Being just towards not only each other as Christians, but towards our fellow man. To give people a fair shake. by being just. All right, the fourth item on our checklist, pure. Purity. And for this, let's turn to the book of James. James chapter 3. We'll look at verse 13 and we'll jump down to 17. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. And it goes on to describe what carnal wisdom is like. Verse 17, but the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable. It is gentle, willing to yield. It's full of mercy and good fruits without partiality. Just, again, as shown there, and without hypocrisy. So pure. What is pure? Pure is morally undefiled. It's been so cleansed that it's fit for the presence before God. That is a concept that is lost on today's culture. So cleansed to be fit for God's presence. There was a time when things were reserved for Sunday go-to-meeting clothes, right? That was typical in culture. And in our church culture, that still is preserved, but we keep our finer clothes for Sabbath services. However, that's not the case for culture in general, is it? There's no such thing as reserved good clothes anymore. There's no such thing as reserved good china. Grandma had the good china in the china cabinet. Can we use it? No, it's for special occasions. When is a special occasion? Nobody knows, but it's reserved for a special occasion. We don't have that so much anymore in our general culture today. But that's what pure is, reserved. It's this, in this particular case, it's not just reserved, but cleansed. What does it take to clean tap water? There are sometimes in different parts of the country, if there's been flooding, especially where it's not safe to drink tap water. Even though it's gone through the processes at the water filtration plant, it's still not safe to drink because it couldn't keep up with all of the input of water. So what does it take to clean tap water? My wife and I installed a reverse osmosis filter on our tap a couple years ago. And it's, if the little gadget is to be believed, really changed the water. You're supposed to fill up the cup with water, and then you test it, and it gives you a reading of the particulates, and then you install the filter, which takes a couple hours, and you test it afterwards, and it gives you a different reading. Of course, if the readings are close together, you just spent 2 hours for nothing anyway, so it's too late to compare them, other than it's doing something that's good. Well, we did, and the change was very dramatic. But it did so with five or six stages, five or six different filters in this unit. The first filter is in there, it's kind of like a sand filter to take out the big particles. And then there's a carbon filter to take out some of the odors that might be in the water. In some places that are, especially in western regions that are close to volcanic activity, can pick up sulfur smell in the water, which is not particularly pleasant for your first cup of water in the morning. So the carbon's in there to help get rid of some of the odors. But there are a couple other filters in there as well, with smaller and smaller diameter openings. And there's a semi-permeable membrane that is almost a molecular level filter as well. And the very last filter, again, is another carbon filter, so that there is absolutely nothing in that water except water. And some people say that it's so pure, you shouldn't drink just it, because if you drink only pure water, it'll actually take minerals out of your body to try to balance out the water. So there's some people that suggest, well, you need to take that water and put it in a jar that has rocks in it, clean rocks, so it can take some of the minerals out of that and drink it. To get water pure is quite a process. And what God asks us to be is pure. That takes a lot of work. The washing of the Word, that's why we do Bible study on a daily basis, so that we can wash our minds and be pure before God. Again, purity is morally undefiled. so cleansed that it's fit for God's presence. So one question we can ask, do we need to have filters in place? We can't make the world around us pure, but we have to have filters in place so that we're not defiled by the world, whether that's filters for our eyes, for TV or the movies that we watch, for our ears, for the music, for our mouth, what we speak. There are many cases for requiring filters because of the world we live in. Purity. The next item on the checklist, lovely. Lovely. 2 Samuel. Let's look at 2 Samuel. 2 Samuel chapter 1. This is about David and Jonathan. David and Jonathan were best friends under a very difficult circumstance. Jonathan's father, Saul, wanted David dead, had actively sought to execute him on a number of occasions. In verse 17, after Saul and Jonathan had died, it says, David sang a song in memory of Saul and Jonathan. Verse 23, it was easy to love Saul and Jonathan. Together in life, together in death, they were faster than eagles and stronger than lions. So this is David's song. It's understandable why he would say that about Jonathan. They were the best of friends. Very difficult circumstances. It would have been easy for David to resent Jonathan by proxy. Your dad's trying to kill me again. But they maintained a friendship even in that circumstance. Now, if that's not the definition of lovely, I'm not sure what is. To have that type of friendship and connection, even though there is antithesis on the outside through another party. Some leaders invoke fear through their force, through their brutality. And some people invoke hostility. I can think of some reality show judges who aren't too friendly to watch on TV. They've got a sourness about them. But they control respect that way, or at least they control that way with their sarcasm. The Christian is supposed to not invoke hostility, not fear, but a Christian is supposed to invoke love by how they treat people. By going the extra mile for someone they don't know, for someone who likely will never be able to repay that debt. And that is what a Christian is supposed to be. To be lovely. To make the Christian religion look attractive as a byproduct of following God's laws. Lovely. Number 6, good report. Good report. Let's look at James chapter 3 again. James chapter 3. This is our chapter about the untamed tongue. We'll start in verse 7. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature can be tamed and has been tamed by mankind, verse 8, but no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. Verse 9, with it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse people who are made in the likeness of God. Verse 10, from the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers, this not ought be so. Good report. From the original Greek, I've been told, because I'm not a Greek scholar, means fair sounding or good speaking. We are to be good speakers. Not in terms of being able to give a speech at a political convention, but what we say should be good. Some commentaries talked about this word in Greek writing being used especially in reference to their pagan temples. Now, we're not trying to connect paganism and God here. The way the Greeks used and understood the word was like this. They used a special silence before the sacrifice to their gods, to their idols. They had reverence in that silence. That was their understanding of the word. And here, the same word is used again. We, our mouths, our speech, our topics should have the highest quality so that they could be used and are used, if we realize it, in God's very presence. The Greeks use it in their pagan altars. Again, if we rewind a couple of points, if the whole world is God's temple, then what we say should have reverence and acceptability to God as though we were in a temple. That is what is meant by fair sounding or good speaking or good report. How we speak. So we can ask ourselves, is our conversation fitting for God to hear? What would He think if He were there? Of course, we know He's there. What does He think when He hears us speak? Do we have a good report? 7, virtue. Virtue. Let's turn to 2 Peter. Just a few pages towards the back. Second Peter chapter 1, verses 2 through 4. And in my Bible, this is fruitful growth in the faith. Verse 2, grace and peace be multiplied to you in the knowledge of God and of Jesus our Lord. Verse 3, as His divine power has given to us all things that pertain to life and godliness through the knowledge of Him who called us by glory and virtue. Verse 4, have been given to us exceedingly great and precious promises, that through these you may be partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world through lust. Virtue. Virtue is also translated as excellence, quality. In a toolbox, it would be a high-quality wrench that has been forged with impeccable steel, not aluminum, that bends when you try to loosen up a nut. It is the best quality that can be obtained. Apparently in the Greek it talks about usually things, as I mentioned, a tool, or maybe a piece of lumber that's going to be made into a decorative artwork. Mostly things, but here this is talking about our character. God who called us by glory and virtue. Virtue or excellence. Being a Christian is tough work. What is required and asked of us? We realize it's not more than has already been done. We focus on that, especially at Passover. What is the excellence that a gold miner is thinking of, wading in muck to knees and elbows in the cold, without proper nutrition, without proper shelter? They are in some very dire circumstances at times. They're thinking of something of excellence. They're thinking of finding that big nugget. They're finding that vein underground. That is the excellence they're looking for. And similarly, our excellence that we are looking for in this particular case is virtue. Okay, item number 8, praiseworthy. If there's anything praiseworthy. Let's look at Romans chapter 13. Romans 13, verses 1 through 3. In my Bible, this has a heading, Submit to Government. At times that's easier than other times, isn't it? Romans 13, verses 1 through 3. Let every soul be subject to the higher authorities. There is no authority but of God. The authorities that exist are ordained by God, so that the one resisting the authority resists the ordinance of God, and the one who resists will receive judgment to themselves. Verse 3, for the rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the bad. And do you desire to be not afraid of the authority? Then do good, and you shall have praise from it. Being praised. Praise here can come from God Himself, it can come from fellow man. Which is going to be more lasting? Well, obviously the praise from God. Well done, my good and faithful servant. For some, the praise that they seek from men lasts as long as it hovers off their lips. Those who had the fanfare before putting their offering into the treasury, they had their reward. They had their praise. That's it. That's your praise. As long as it rings in their ears, which wasn't very long. But here we're looking at something praiseworthy that goes much longer. There was a bit of controversy in the gymnastics. Was it individual gymnastics? Yes, it must have been. Individual gymnastics event. One of the competitors was trying so hard to get the gold, which is natural, and got second place. And the look on their face while they were on the stand was one of sourness. They did not look pleased to have won an Olympic medal because they wanted the gold. They wanted higher praise. Now, in the case of the Olympics, that's fine. But what are we seeking for praise? Do we seek it out of ego? Why do we want praise from God? Well, the only way He'll praise us is if it comes really from our heart. If we're doing it because we want to please Him. Because we love Him. Willingly. Whether or not people are looking, that is what God is looking for. To call praiseworthy. Checklist number 9. Think on these things. Let's turn to Romans 8. Just a few pages back. Romans 8. Do you have your new calendar purchased yet for 2013? I don't yet either. Maybe September, October, it'll come in a mail from the insurance guy or from the bank. I'm not sure who gets the honor of the place on the wall this year. When I get mine, when you get yours, will you immediately turn to the month of April and circle the 15th? Because you're so excited for that day to arrive. Doing taxes is not fun. It's not fun, but there's a reason why we do it. Let's look at Romans 8, verse 18. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. The word there is consider. It's the same word used, think on these things. That's why I brought up tax day. When we go to meet with the accountant or when we get our forms ourselves and fill out the ridiculous level of paperwork, we have all of our supporting documents, all of the numbers in place for the deductions, for the tithes, for how much this costs and how much that costs, whether or not our medical expenses meet the threshold. I don't know how many eraser tips we go through collectively during that month, but can you imagine how many erasers we go through? It's got to be a lot. Making all those adjustments so that at the very end we have an accounted number of either how much we owe or how much the government is going to give us back. It's that accounting process that's alluded to with this word think or consider. It is the process of adding and subtracting, of focusing. This is not just think on these things. This is do an accounting. Evaluate, compare. How are we doing? How does this list compare with our lives? That is what this word alludes to. When we submit our paperwork to the IRS, we have a very high degree of confidence that we owe that much or the government's going to pay us that much because we have the supporting documents. We calculated it and took the time. And that's the same thing that we need to do here according to the instructions of the Scriptures, to think on these things, evaluate, compute, account on these things. The engineers at the JPL Labs were sitting on pins and needles for those 7 minutes because there was such a great distance between themselves and that Mars rover. We sometimes put distance between ourselves and God depending on how we live, depending on how much study, how much prayer time, our meditation, our fasting, our conduct. Well, between now and the fall feast, let's endeavor to use this as a checklist to shorten that distance, so that when we do get to the fall feast season, we can get the very most out of it.